Hey everyone, Jason Klein here. I'm the senior minister here at Refocus Christian Church, located in Follansbee, West Virginia. I just want to say thank you so much for listening to our content. Feel free to share or like or leave any comments you have. We're always looking to engage with people. What are some questions you have? What are some things that you might be learning? And at the same time, if you want to know more about us, check us out at refocuschurch.com, which also has a link to our Facebook there. And so just has upcoming events, things that are going on, sermon series that we're in. So once again, thanks for being a part of this. Thank you for listening in. And as always, please feel free to share and comment or like, because we want to make sure that we're trying to reach as many people possible with the good news of Jesus Christ. All right. Have a great day. Hello, everyone. Hey, welcome to episode 2 of Let's Talk About It. I'm kind of excited for this one, mainly because it's kind of one that's always been a big part of my life personally. I am I'm a very logical person. I like to read a lot. I like to try to figure things out, and I think it's a gift that God has allowed me, you know. So I'm the kind of guy that can watch like a video one time and do it. Now the problem is I'm not always like great. Some things require practice, but still, like, it, I'm just a very logical person. That's how my brain works. I'm not very creative, but I can kind of understand things. And when I first became a Christian, seeking God to me was kind of a mental endeavor, right? Because I was the guy that was asking the tough questions and trying to figure out. And when I would read things in the Bible, you know, I would ask why and really just try to figure those out. And so I've always had, this isn't to say that I don't have faith, but I have a very logical way that I perceive the world. If things don't make sense to me, it kind of makes me stand back and go, okay, why? You know, why is like one of the greatest questions I think you can ask. Now, there are certain things regarding our faith that I think that you just have to trust God, and that's where faith comes in, right? That's where, you know, there's things that I can't explain, and I'm okay with that. I've become okay with that. But really, there's people that just can't get over it, and that's okay. But the thing we're going to talk about this morning is this idea of learning to be a critical thinker. So my time in student ministry, like I said, 10, 15 years, right around there, in the different classes that I would teach, Sunday school, Sunday night, stuff like that, when you asked questions about the Bible, there were always very typical answers. One of the things that I kind of got, I would probably say a lot, is, you know, Jesus, in this case, is not the answer. Now, don't misunderstand. I'm not taking away from Jesus and what he's done. But what I was trying to encourage my students was to think bigger than this. Really kind of wrestle with this. Some of these questions, you know, I think some of the things that we study in Scripture can be challenging. They don't make sense to us. You know, we don't always have an answer for why God does what he does. I think the Old Testament is proof of that. There's some things from, you know, for some reason, there's this disconnect between science and faith in our culture, and I don't think that has to be. I think science has shown us more than enough evidence that there's something bigger out there than just us. And I know that people use it for the wrong reasons, but I can't control what they do. All I can do is, can I use something like critical thinking to further my relationship and my understanding with God. And the reason why I think that's important is because I really do think that long gone are the days where the generation coming up next simply just believes because that's what you tell them to believe. First off, I think that's unhealthy anyways, you know, just to believe because someone told you to think a certain way. But I think we've had previous generations, and please understand this is no knock on you, where the answers were just there. And they were there, and this is what we taught, and this is what we believed, and no one really questioned it, and everyone kind of moved on. But I think those days are gone. And I say that because the amount of knowledge available, good or bad, out there today is substantial. I mean, in case you don't know, and maybe you don't, the average person probably gets more of their beliefs. So not just theology, but just simple, you know, day-to-day life beliefs, the way they live, how they handle their money, the way they treat people, the jobs they pursue, all of that. One way or another, most people get their information from some social media platform. TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, whatever else is out there. I mean, TikTok, let's just take that for a second, and you have these people who do these short video clips all the time, and they share this information, and some of it's true, and some of it's not, but enough people respond that it becomes popular, and then you end up in these weird debates, and there are people who I believe that they think that just because someone has a large platform, what they say must be true. Now, I don't think that's true. I do, however, think the reason they have a large platform is because something they're saying is resonating with people. Whether right or wrong, however you view it, they're saying at least what a large group of people are thinking or not thinking. And then it becomes this, you know, debate back and forth. So I think it's important for us in today's culture to make sure that we are encouraging the next generation to be critical thinkers. Excuse me. Not just when it comes to life, right? But that's important. I mean, because the mob mentality, if you've ever done any kind of study on psychology, is a real thing. If you get enough people together in a room, it's really easy to follow along and just do whatever they're doing. I think we see this sometimes in protests and things like that. Not that it's wrong to protest, because I don't think that. But some of those protests have escalated to a point where a lot of damage and destruction was caused. And if you pay attention, most of those people probably came there with no ill intent. But because there was a large enough group that went that direction, they just jumped on board. And I think that's really easy for anyone to do. But I think the generation coming up is struggling with that because they've almost been told to just go along with the crowd. I mean, think about it from a church standpoint, right? I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, you basically just did what you were told. You came in, you sat down, you stayed quiet. Maybe you learned something, and then you went about your life. And so, you know, we did things because we were supposed to do things, or we were told we were supposed to do things. And so when you get people who start asking the questions of why, it starts creating confusion because the response to the why question is one of two things. Either you tell them to sit down and stop asking and just do what you're told, or you take the time and you explain it to them. For instance, I have a 7-year-old. His name's Everett. A while back, he came to me and was like, "Hey, you know, I just got done cooking on the stove." And he's like, "I'm going to touch the burner." And I'm like, "Buddy, you shouldn't do that." and the next question out of his mouth was, "Why?" So I had two choices. I could either tell him why, or I could tell him to go sit down and don't worry about it, just don't do it. What's going to happen, more than likely, is if I don't give him a good answer, if I can't at least give him the why, he is going to eventually touch the stove. He's just going to figure it out on his own. He's probably going to get burned. But if I explain to him the reason why, and hey, it's because, you know, I've been hurt before. I know that you're going to get hurt. Like, if I can sit down and give him a good reason, there's a chance that he might critically look at the situation and be like, "You know what? I think I'm going to avoid that because that just makes sense. So let's talk about theology, and let's talk about what it is to raise kids in the church, and not just kids, but your own personal growth, your own faith, right? We are told very easily, a lot of times, so we're told that, you know, the idea is you can be able to explain your faith. Peter says this in 1 Peter 3:15, says, "But in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect." And you could take this a couple of different ways. And I think a lot of times we take it as just a presentation of the gospel. But I think Peter really is just talking about kind of the bigger picture. Is be able to explain and give the reason for why you believe what you believe. So theologically, I think sometimes we have to, we should wrestle with things that we don't necessarily understand. Like I said, and I'll probably say it more than once here, I think the generation coming up, they're looking for answers. And to simply tell them to just believe because you tell them doesn't have the same impact that you think it does. Because what happens is if they can't find the answer from us, then they're going to find the answer somewhere else. And listen, I can prove that because just look at the world around us. Look at the culture. Look at what's leading the way or appears to be leading the way when it comes to beliefs. So many people have kind of bought in to some of these ideologies, and that's what we'll call them, that are unhealthy and they're unbiblical. And I don't even necessarily think that it's because they agree with all of it, but I think that when they were looking for an answer, these particular ideologies gave them something more than just, well, sit down, be quiet, and do what we say. And so when it comes to the Bible, when it comes to the understanding of Scripture, we have to be able to critically look and try to understand things that happen. Right? So it doesn't mean that we're always going to have it all figured out. But at the same time, there's nothing wrong with questioning things. There's nothing wrong with trying to understand. I mean, the amount of resources that exist that can help people learn more than just reading the Bible is pretty profound. And one of the things that I have a lot of commentaries, and basically these are just people's thoughts, ideas on particular scriptures, but there's a lot of them that exist now that are really kind of simple, and that exists because there are professors, there are scholars, there are people much smarter than me who got together and said, how do we help the average person try to understand more about the Bible? Listen, if you have a Bible, just a regular Bible, just a traditional Bible, you know, whatever. And if you don't have a study Bible, I really want to encourage you to get one because I think they're important. Part of us understanding our faith is being able to, you know, understand the why question leads us to a lot of great things, right? So when you read something in the Bible and you ask that question why, it kind of piques this curiosity. Which means you have to do a little bit of research. You have to, you know, figure out the context, figure out what was being said. Why is the wording the way that it is? Is there something unique about the verbiage or how something's being said? And listen, it's translated from a different language. Hebrew is primarily the Old Testament, and Greek is primarily the New Testament. So you're coming from one language to another, and I'm not saying that you need to necessarily understand Hebrew and Greek. But understanding that when you translate sometimes, things can get lost in translation. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just, it means you have to do a little bit of research and dig into what's going on. So for instance, let's talk about the parable of the sowers, right? When Jesus is talking about the sowing, and he says to the crowd, you know, if you do this, then you can reap 10, 20, 100 times what you've sowed. Now, to you and I, that seems like a pretty cool number. By the way, if you're not a farmer, that probably doesn't make a whole lot, make a lot of sense. But he was speaking to an audience who one of their primary ways of providing for their families and their livelihood was agriculture. And so, you know, the question is, why does Jesus say 10, 20, 100 times? I mean, that just seems like a lot, right? And the truth is, if you look at it, if you understand the culture at the time, it is a lot. Because for them, to have a 2 to 3 time return on their field was incredible. The area that he was speaking in, the soil wasn't great. It was really rocky. Lots of mountains. He had to work really, really hard. So Jesus is saying to essentially these group of farmers that if you invest what I give you, you're going to see a return 100 times more than even what you see now. And so that would have piqued the interest of a lot of people. They would have started paying attention. Right? But you don't know that if you don't ask why. Why did Jesus say the things that he did the way that he did? Right? So being able to critically think about scripture is important. Being able to ask those questions, to seek those things out is good. Now that means you have to be careful, because there's a lot of people out there who say a lot of things that are not biblically true. I had a professor once tell me that you can't be a scholar in today's world unless you come up with something about the Bible that no one else has. And for a text that hasn't changed a whole lot in the last couple thousand years, really, if you're trying to create something, a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times these new ideas get away from what the Bible is really saying. And part of that is because you have to understand that it was written to a certain group of people during a certain time. It doesn't mean that it doesn't apply to us. It just means that you have to read it and understand it in their context. The parable of the sower is a great example of that. Most of us have no idea how to farm. We don't grow our own produce. We don't do any of that. We go to the grocery store. So that might not make a lot of sense to us, but to his audience, it was huge. Right? So this is why it's important. And part of, I think, the reason why it's important for you to be a critical thinker is you teach your kids to be critical thinkers. Listen, when your kids come to you and they have a question about something they've read in the Bible, how do you respond? So the other day, Jesse's kind of he's our student minister here at our church, and we went to the Christian Center, which is like a town over, and we did a Bible study, and we kind of broke away from tradition, right? Most Bible studies, you go in, and you kind of talk about what you know, and you hope that these kids get it, and they're like fourth, fifth grade, and instead what we did is I just opened up the door and opened up the table for them to ask questions. Now, it was slow going at first because, you know, most of the time kids are shy, but they asked some really good questions. There was two that really stuck out to me. One was, how do you know God really exists? So we talked about it. We talked about Jesus, the historical evidence for Jesus and the fact that he was a real person. And the fact that, you know, I think C.S. Lewis says that he's either a lunatic, a liar, or he's Lord. Right? So either the stuff Jesus said was true or it wasn't, but because it's lasted for so long and had such a huge impact, I'm going to lean on the fact that he really is who he said he is. So if you believe that, then we've seen God. You know, we've seen who he is. The other part is we talked about creation. Creation is a perfect example of the existence of, even if you don't give him the name God, like we do as Christians, critically, if you look at it, and I know science can somewhat disagree, and by the way, I think that the scientists who disagree, I don't think their problem is so much with the science of it as much as I think they're just looking for a way out, a way to justify other things, but that's another podcast. But if you look at creation and the way that things work and how they unfold, I mean, how can you not look around and see? There's got to be something bigger, right? And so we talked about that. And then one of the other questions was, is how do you believe, or why do you believe, how do we know that Jesus really rose from the dead? And we talked about that in the writings, the historical writings outside of Scripture that point to those events happening. The fact that if it hadn't happened, why would the Romans let that lie continue to exist? Because it made them look bad. So either they didn't really care, which I don't think is true, or there was enough evidence to the contrary that he really did rise from the grave, that there was nothing they could do to stop it, right? So these are critical thinking moments. It's important that we teach the generation coming up to do this. Because if they don't, when they get to a place in their life, say college, or they get older, and they come across someone who has a better explanation, then there's a good chance they're going to start believing that. Because they're not going to be able to defend how they think. They're not going to be able to defend the Bible the way they can. They're not going to be, as Peter says, they're not going to be able to give an answer for the things that give them hope, because it's not going to make sense. Because all they were taught was to sit down, be quiet, and believe this. And not only is that not good for the next generation, but that's not good for you or me. And God gave us wisdom. He gave us the ability to have reason. He gave us the ability to understand logic. We have a higher intelligence than the animals, you know, of the kingdom, you know, the animal kingdom. You know, we're sitting at the top, and he gave us the ability to be critical thinkers. So why do we shy away from that so much? Why do we treat it like a bad thing when someone asks, well, why? And I think it's because, one, I think we're afraid. I think the average person doesn't know how to, they don't know how to answer something. And they figure if they're just, you know, they just don't bring it up. They don't have to answer it. You know, so if your kid asks you a question you can't answer, you just tell them to sit down, be quiet, and move on. Or arrogance and pride gets in the way, and you don't know what the answer is, but you make something up. Because you would rather your child or your friend or whoever think you know something you don't than to accept the fact that maybe you really don't. I tell people all the time that sometimes you might ask me a question, and if I'm being honest with myself, I have to tell you I don't know. Now, it doesn't mean I won't find it out, but it means that if I don't know, I don't know. And then so how do we encourage people to really get deeper in their faith, in their understanding, in their belief, and how do we get people to really understand who God is and the transformation he wants for their lives? And I think one of the ways we do that is by teaching kids, by teaching Christians, by teaching, you know, even non-believers that it's okay to ask why. That's important. Now, where you get your information after you ask why matters. You can't just listen to anyone. You need to find a balance that out, right? And there's so much good evidence for the reliability of Scripture and its existence and all the events and everything that happened. There's no reason why we can't find the answers, but to just tell people to sit down and be quiet and do what they're told just isn't working anymore. And then I think that's the danger of where we are as a culture, is the next generation is looking for answers and they're not finding it with us. They're not finding it in the church. It's not that it's not there. It's not that it's not in the Bible. They're just not finding it. And so encourage your kids, encourage your friends, encourage yourself. Listen, it's okay to ask why. I see nothing wrong with God giving us the ability to discern and to learn things. I mean, that's what we're supposed to do. And I can tell you, as someone who's a very logical person, my faith has only become stronger because I've wrestled with a lot of things that I don't quite understand. Now, and I said it earlier that sometimes at the end of the day, I don't have an answer. I don't think I'll ever know everything there is to know about God, probably not until I die. There's some mysteries about him that I can't understand. And listen, I have to be okay with that. I'm not sometimes, but I have to be okay with that. But that shouldn't stop me from trying to figure out and learn everything that I can. So, I'm going to leave you with this, and it's going to be kind of an open-ended question. And this was a question that was posed to me a couple years ago, and it's really kind of stuck with me. The creation account that you and I know in the Bible, there's kind of a couple different approaches to it, but really the main one is that it was a 7-day literal event. God created in 6, rested on 7. Those are representation of 24-hour periods, so he did it all in 6 days, rest on the 7th. That's not the only idea out there, by the way. We're also not the only, for lack of a better word, we're not the only religion that has a creation story. We're not the only culture that has a creation story. So the question posed to me was, what if it wasn't a literal 6 days? And the person asking this question is someone who I really respect, and there's someone who I've learned a lot from. And you know, my initial knee-jerk reaction was like, oh, that's just dumb. Why would we think that? But, you know, they asked again, what if it really wasn't? And the reason they say that is because, you know, what is it? In one of the Psalms, it teaches us that to us, a day is like a day to God is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. So his understanding of time is different than ours. And so, he posed the question, what if it really wasn't a literal, 6 days of creation? And so he kind of kept talking, and I was trying to follow him. And he said, what if what really matters in the event or the story of creation is not so much how long it took to make it, but what if really matters in the creation account is who did it? What if at the end of the day, that's what really mattered? The reason that it was written, the reason that the author wrote it, the reason that they even speak to it is because they wanted to make absolute certain that people knew that it was God, their God, the God of the universe who created everything since the beginning. If you take the 6 literal days out of the equation, does it change anything? Does it change the narrative at all? Does it make God less powerful? Does it make him being the one who created everything less evident? Do you think that removing the 6 literal days interpretation gets in the way of the fact that God, the God we believe in, is the one who did it? I'm not going to answer that question for you. But that's one of those questions that I think is a critical thinking question. If it wasn't really 6 literal days, let's say hypothetically, science somehow proves that it wasn't 6 literal days, will that change anything for you? All right. I'll leave you with that. Later. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for checking out this week's podcast. Hey, if you want to learn more about our church, check us out at refocuschurch.com or look us up on Facebook at Refocus Christian Church. We're located in Follansbee, West Virginia. We'd love to have you and your family out. Come check out and see what God is doing in our people, in our community, in our church. All right. Later.